Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
And I'm Tessie.
And we are sisters-in-law. We started this podcast because we believe that it isn't necessarily the rich, powerful, or well-known who are making the waves in this world. It's the moms. It's the women tending to their toddlers while launching international nonprofits from their living rooms and caring for babies and creating art. It's the women who believe in their mother self and their other self and who nourish both as those around them stand back in admiration. We know this to be true. It's the hand that rocks the cradle that rules the world. Join us in the Mama Bear community where we support and encourage women doing big and bold things with their lives in addition to being great moms. We dare you to harness the power of your Mama Bear and live a life of love and compassion.
That's right. So Leslie, today we talked to Dana Lindsay Dangler about really losing everything. The whole life you had planned and had thought you were going to lead, just losing it in an instant.
We really get into it right away with Dana. I was blown away by her openness to sharing with us what it was like to lose a young husband.
I know. In the interview, you talk about how hard it is to imagine the Dana we know, the vibrant, energetic, full of life woman, with the Dana she describes in the earlier portion of the conversation, who has lost it all. I mean, to me, when I was re-listening to it, it's really the proof that the people you know who just emanate this light have been through more mud than you can possibly imagine.
And, you know,
I think Dana's story will encourage, I hope it will encourage any mama bears out there who are going through something to find help in a therapist, a friend, a spiritual counselor, whatever it might be, and just trust the process. Have some patience. It's just so important.
Yeah, something I love and admire about Dana is just her openness. And we talk about how, you know, she went through the unimaginable young, but also the light that she sheds on struggle and on depression and mental illness. One of the first or one of the early conversations that I had with Dana before I really even knew much about her was the fact that we both have struggled with mental illness, with depression and anxiety. And for me, just being able to find someone else who was willing to admit struggle was really, really important and crucial at that time in my life. So I hope that Mama Bears do listen to this conversation and just know that the stigma doesn't need to be there. You know, so many, I think we'd be surprised probably about the number of us who really, truly struggle in a really intense way. And I know, you know, finding a counselor is really, really hard. It's a process that I just hate, actually. It's exhausting. I have a great therapist, but it took a while to find her. And I think that when you are in sort of those periods of low and of no energy and of just like, oh my gosh, I'm in so deep here, it's really hard to summon any sort of energy to go through this process. But it's worth it. And, you know, I have a therapist that I talk to personally. My husband and I, Jake and I, have tried marriage counseling as well. And I have to say that's something that we dropped the ball on. We just, because the process was difficult, and we had a certain number of therapists that we could see under our insurance, and we just couldn't find the right fit. And so we gave up. And I think that can be a lesson of, you know, it is hard, but we probably should try again because it really is a good thing.
Yeah. Leslie, I think you're so right when you say that, you know, when you're in these moments of kind of despair or depression, you have no energy to really seek out a good therapist, right? But, I mean, we've all been there when we're just too overwhelmed. It doesn't matter you know, if you're the kind of person who's like, I'm going to pick myself up by my bootstraps and handle this myself, we all mm-hmm. need help. But asking for help and seeking out help is so, so hard. But I think Dana really gives an example of why it's essential. I mean, she lost her husband when they had three small boys, and she didn't do it for 5 years. And then it hit her, right? She talks about losing her hair. She mm-hmm. talks about not being able to eat. She talks about not being able to get off the couch. And so really kind of at the detriment, I mean, she didn't have time, you know, you're now a widow with three children, but she talks about how she wishes she wouldn't have waited that long, because there's kind of not danger, but it's not good.
Yeah. And I don't want to live like in fear that someday I'm really going to need a counselor, yeah. like something terrible is going to happen. And really even talking about like marriage counseling, you know, it's probably, I'm just thinking about this now as we're talking about it, but Jake and I should probably start looking again. Not that like we're in a terrible place right now, but sometimes marriage is really hard.
Yeah.
And right now we have the energy to exactly. look for a therapist, and, you know, sometime we might not.
Right. Absolutely. When you're in a healthy season, sometimes that's mm-hmm. the best time to really seek out those things so that they're there in your moments of desperation, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to waste any time. It's such a great conversation. Dana gets very vulnerable with us. I feel like we do need to just let our mama bears know this is the one and only podcast thus far that we did drink some wine. So yes. There are moments you might hear us clinking our glasses together, because sometimes when your friend is crying and you're all together, that's the only way you can respond, is just letting them know that we're with you and we mm-hmm. love you.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
All right, let's hear from Dana. Hey, Mama Bears. Today, we are welcoming Dana Lindsay Dangler. After marrying young and having three small children, she lost her husband unexpectedly. Left with three small boys, Dana had to find the courage and energy to face this new life that was totally different than she had expected. Dana is also a very creative person. One of the ways she nurtures her other self is by creating really remarkable pieces of art. In fact, every year she donates a piece to our water party that we've discussed many times on the podcast that we hold every November, and it's always one of our pieces with the highest bids at the end of the night.
That's right. And in the years since losing Ryan, she has married a really wonderful man named John, who had a daughter from a previous relationship, and together they've created this beautiful life full of love and gardening and creativity and weightlifting and joy. So Dana, we are so lucky to have you here on the Mama Bear Dares podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Hey.
So let's dive right in. Dana, as we said in the introduction, your mama bear was really forced to come out after the death of Ryan. So tell us about your first love.
Ryan was one of probably the most laid-back people I've ever met in my entire life. And actually, I can say that because my oldest boy is a spitting image of him. Super mellow, never got angry, like, my favorite thing to say to him was, would you hurry up? Because nothing made him hurry. He was really handy. He loved fixing things. Our house was his project. If he wasn't working on our house, he was working on somebody else's house. All while, you know, still working at Village Inn, raising the boys with me, all of it. He was very patient. You would have to be to date me. And he was definitely patient with the children, too. Like, never, ever yelled at them, I don't think. Never raised a hand to them. If they made a mess, he would literally sit down and make a mess with them mm-hmm. and laugh. Like, he, wonderful father. I don't think I have anything bad to say, actually. Yeah. So we're good.
Yeah. So can you go back to the place and tell us just a little bit more about Ryan and just what happened and how you felt back at that time?
I can go back. I do quite frequently. I don't think it's bad to talk about him. We talk about him all the time at home. Mm-hmm. And when people ask me, I'm very candid about mm-hmm. what happened to him. There's no reason to sugarcoat it, really. He was actually, like I said, a handyman. So he was out trimming trees in the yard and doing yard work. His dad had come over that day, and I was working on getting a garage sale ready. So I had to run some stuff over to my friend's house, and I left, say goodbye, you know, gave him a kiss. And he's like, well, I'm going to get on the roof, and I'm going to, on the porch, and trim this tree. So, okay, bye. Didn't think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was gone for about an hour, and that's all it took. I remember driving home, and I could see, like, sirens, like, the lights in the distance, and I'm like, huh. You know, I wonder what happened. I bet he dropped a tree, probably on a car. I was mad. Yeah. So, like, I'm driving home mad, and then I pull in, and I'm like, oh, it's an ambulance. Like, what's going on? And apparently, I've had to piece what happened because I wasn't there. Right. I pieced what happened together by the fireman, the doctors, his dad. He had gotten on our front porch and climbed on top of the ladder to trim the tree branch. And the tree branch was very heavy. So when he trimmed it, it snapped and it hit him in the ladder. And it literally propelled him up into the air and down onto the base of his skull on the sidewalk right in front of our house. So his dad saw the entire thing. And I don't even know how I would be if I saw the whole thing. He stopped traffic, got somebody to call 911. Ryan went to the hospital. They discovered that he had shattered his skull, kind of like a windshield shatters, you know, like a rock hits it from the back all the way to the front. He had rising intracranial pressure. He was very critical. They life flighted him to Iowa City. I guess during the life flight, he lost a bunch of blood in a couple pieces of the skull that were floating around, severed his carotid artery, so he had a stroke, which pretty much rendered him a vegetable. So he was on full life support at Iowa City, and he actually, his body went into what's called a DIC, disseminated intravascular coagulation. And it's kind of it's a problem with your clotting factor. You have so much tissue damage in your brain, which is where he had his head injury, that his body forgot how to clot after time. So he bled completely. His organs failed, and we finally made the decision to turn off his machine. So about 24 hours later, we turned it off.
So by the time you came and saw the was he in the ambulance? When did you...
They shut the door as I pulled up.
Okay. And then did you meet them at the hospital? I'm just... In the case you can't tell, listeners, Dana is a nurse. And so that's why there was a lot of technical information. And I think that would help me process, too. I want to know exactly what happened so that I can process that, too. But maybe just take us back to the moment that you knew something was really wrong.
I remember that moment. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. You're very correct. Mm-hmm. I'm very technical. Mm-hmm. I want to know what happened. And when I ran up to the house, his dad just looked at me and said, Ryan fell. And I had no idea what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I finally found a fireman who, I still don't know his name, who he is. But I asked him, I'm like, what happened to my husband? He's like, he fell on his head. And I can tell you he was bleeding from a lot of places. And I'm like his ears? He's like, yes, like his ears. And that's when it hit me. This is serious. Like, you don't bleed from your ears. You don't bleed from your mouth. You don't bleed from your nose, especially if you fall on the back of your head. So it was that moment of, shit, something's wrong. Yeah. I have to go. Yeah. And that's all I kept saying was, I have to go. I have to go now. I need you to move. I need everybody to move. Get out of my way. I need to leave.
And where were the boys?
Zach was at daycare, and Isaiah and Zane were sleeping. They were napping. So I don't even know who stayed with my children. I just remember leaving. I do remember my brother. He stayed at the house, and he is the one that cleaned up all the blood so that I didn't see it when I got home. His family came up to the hospital. Ryan's family did. Yeah, that's that moment that I knew something was not right.
So by the time you got to Iowa City, did you see him in Davenport? And then he was flown to Iowa City, but you would have had to drive, which is about 45 minutes for our listeners not familiar with Iowa. When he was flying to Iowa City, did you know at that point that there wasn't a lot of hope yet, or was there still hope going into Iowa City?
Do you know the stages of grief?
Right.
How you have, like, bargaining, acceptance, denial, all of that.
Right.
I went through, I think, all the stages on the way to Iowa City. But driving to Iowa City, I was very prominent in the hopeful stage, the denial.
Yeah.
Even though I knew it was bad. I mean, you just don't life like somebody to Iowa City. I was, you know, in the car, I'm talking to myself. I'm like, he's going to be okay. He's, you know, we'll reduce the pressure and he'll go through rehab and he may have to learn to walk again, but I'm going to be there and it's going to be okay and he'll be fine. He's got three boys. Like,
right. This
isn't happening.
Yeah.
He's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And I kept saying that. I rode up with his brother-in-law, Gary Merriman. He's one of my friends. And the whole way up there, we were trying to just be positive.
Yeah.
And denying, basically, what was actually occurring.
And remind us how old your kids were at that time.
Zach was 5, Isaiah was 2, and Zane was 1. Zane had just turned 1. His birthday was in June, and it happened in July.
Okay, and Ryan was how old?
He was 28.
Okay. I have a really good friend who just lost her daughter, and we were talking about, like, that moment that they let go and kind of cross over. So were you there when you decided to unhook life support, and what, just put us back there if you can.
I remember, because I'm medical, I understood that there was going to be nothing.
Yeah.
There was no more Ryan. Mm-hmm. There was this cold body laying in the hospital bed that a machine was keeping him alive. His family needed some time, I think, to say goodbye to him. So they all did. This was after I had told them, you know, he's not going to make it out of this. We're going to have to shut off the machine. I mean, the doctors talked about it. We were all really well aware. But doing it is completely different. Like, I just remember I laid my head on his chest and I could hear his heartbeat and I could feel it. And he was cold and they shut the machine off. And you hear that last heartbeat. And it's awesome. It's ugly. It's beautiful. Because you're there. Sorry for that part.
Okay, just real quick.
Good. Okay, I'm better now. Sorry.
I think hearing you talk about this and knowing you.
Okay, I don't cry very often.
Well, just knowing you with now and not knowing you, I don't know this part of your life. I just see the Dana that I see now. I mean, I know how strong I think you are now, but I don't truly understand, like, what do you have to be made of to go through something like that?
At 26.
At 26 with three babies. I mean, where did you find, like, that, where does it come from? How do you put one foot in front of the other?
And that's the part I really don't know. I did discover that I have this amazing ability to block out emotion. And not badly, but it's like a survivor mode. I think I've heard people refer to it in some of the questions, you know. It's what you literally go into. It's what I did. I was like, okay, I have bills to pay. You know, I have a funeral to plan. And the boys need to still go to school, and they're still hungry. And you still have to put one foot in front of the other. And some people can't do it, and some people can. And I was one of those people that I was able to shut everything off temporarily to get what needed to be done, to get up in the morning, take care of the boys, make sure that they came through this without, like, emotional scarring or damage, so that I did not want them to see me sit in the corner and cry. I wanted them to see me that you still have a life to live. You still have to get up every day, whether he's here or not. I mean, we miss him, we love him, but we still have to do our life, and we have to move forward. So that's kind of what I did. It's not healthy, I can promise you that, but sometimes you have to do what you have to do to live.
I think often we talk about the mama bear, obviously, on the podcast, and sometimes the mama bear instinct does protect us from some things, and, like, we have to almost, it is a compartmentalization, right? But in that moment, it's really hard to think about your own grief when you do have three boys to raise, right? So I don't necessarily think that it's unhealthy or healthy. I think it is really just a day-to-day thing. And I always think of the quote that your favorite people you will ever know have been through the worst thing you can possibly imagine. And so when Leslie's saying, it's so weird to picture you, who's this just bright light and positive force in the world. And I think so many of the people that I have gone through things I cannot imagine, right? Because it's just like diamonds are shaped by tremendous pressure. And that's essentially what you were. So at 26, that's just a really young age to have to shoulder that burden. What did it teach you about life and about death that most 26-year-olds just cannot possibly fathom?
That was one question that I have a hard time answering, actually, because it was more than that that taught me about life and death, really, because there were other events that happened, you know, after he died, like, I went into a depression, and, you know, I had to fight for my own life after that, and it just teaches you that, I know it's so cliche, it really is, but your life is seriously precious. Like, every minute you're here is truly a gift to you. There, you can't waste it. You shouldn't waste it being angry at people. You should never waste it being not doing anything with your life. There's always something that you can do, and there's always somebody to be loved, and somebody to hug, and somebody to smile at. And you just, you learn to respect life a lot more when you see somebody who's so young not be able to go on living. And it's amazing seeing the circle of life, too. Like, because I'm a nurse, I see it all the time. We're all born to die. I mean, as soon as you're born, you're virtually dying. I mean, that's how we are. It's the circle of life. To see it happen young, no, that's not fair.
Right.
You know, everybody should live to be a ripe old age and achieve all their dreams and goals. Some of us don't get to. Right. And it's just unfortunate that we were not able to have him here to raise his children or to see his kids grow up or to live a life fully. But on the other hand, I have learned to respect my life a lot more because of that and love my children more fiercely and do more with them and live life more loudly and ferociously as best I can.
So during that time when, you know, the kid, you were grieving, I'm sure, and also putting food on the table every night, you know, just sort of getting by, what was that like? Both practically speaking and, you know, just in a more soulful way. So I think you became a stay-at-home mom then, right? And that was kind of, was that a choice that surprised people? Was that something, why did you feel like that was what you wanted to do at that moment?
What I talked about, I wanted my boys to be able to live through something. I mean, this is, that anybody dying is a fairly traumatic event, especially in a child. More so I was worried about Zach. Isaiah and Zane, yes, I'm worried about them, but they were very young, one and two. I don't think they have any memory, really. But I think Zach does, and I wanted to make sure that he was okay. So my primary goal was to stay home and make sure that they still had full lives. I was very fortunate. We had some life insurance policies so that I was able to stay home with my children. Some people aren't that fortunate, and I was really blessed for that. I didn't really grieve. I didn't grieve at that time. I grieved later. I grieved when I went through my depression, I think. I blocked it off. I walled it up. My brother lived with me, so he did help with some of the stuff with the children. He lived in the in my attic. So, like, at night when the kids would go to bed, I still needed me time. You asked me about fostering my other self, and that's what I would do. I would put the children to bed, and I would take the monitor up to my brother and say, I need to leave. And I would go get coffee at Village Inn or play cards. I mean, I, you know, go out and have a beer with one of my friends. I just, I needed that time to myself after the children went to bed. I still didn't grieve, but I wanted to make sure that I had me time.
You've referenced the depression a few times. What led to that point? And is that when really the enormity of the situation hit you? And is that what led to the depression? Or do you think it was building before he passed?
I remember right after he died, one of my friends, and I don't know who it is, they looked at me and they said, Dana, if you don't deal with this, if you don't face your grief, in 5 years it's going to come back. And I was like, oh, whatever. I'll be fine. You know, I'm always fine. 5 years almost to the day, I kid you not, I started shaking, my hair started falling out, and I went into a major depressive disorder episode. Physically, mentally, I was an emotional train wreck. And a lot of it, I think, had to do with Ryan. I started remembering things. I started dreaming about him more. I started, that was when I could sleep. Some of it was insomnia. I lost like 30 pounds in 2 months. I didn't eat. I was literally laying on my couch every day in pain and just thinking about him and then thinking about myself and thinking about the boys. And that's all I could think about. So, you know, you put that wall up and you block things out to survive, but that wall comes down later. I mean, it truly does. You have to deal with it at some point in your life. For me, it was 5 years later. So.
So for a lot of people, depression and any sort of mental illness is kind of a taboo subject. It's not one that they want to be open about. It's one that they have trouble really even admitting to themselves. And I know we've had a lot of conversations about this and about being okay with therapy and about being okay with medication. So what was the treatment like for you? How did you find your way out of this?
When I was a nurse, I'll just self-admit this, I was kind of an asshole because I didn't understand depression and I didn't believe in the seriousness of it. Even though I had patients that had that as part of their life, I was like, well, why can't they be strong? Why do they need this medication? I did not understand until I was in it myself. And you realize, you're like, this is the most real thing that's ever happened to me. Like, I have pain in my entire body, and I know it's from my depression. But it is real, serious, physical pain. And life is so hard. But I changed my life. I completely changed my life. I remember going, I started with my family doctor, and he told me, you know, you need to eat healthy and stop smoking and don't drink and lose weight and eventually everything will come into place and get some counseling while you're at it. And I'm like, whoa.
That's a tall order.
That's everything. Yeah, like, can we start with numero uno, please?
I just got off the couch.
Took everything I could to just come into office.
Yeah, absolutely.
So exactly.
You know, and I was like, this isn't working. So then I went to one psychiatrist who was like, oh, you like have bipolar and blah and this. And I'm like, oh, this is not working either. Like, we're not jiving. And I finally found a psychiatrist in private practice. And she sat me down and she's like, I know you don't like medicine. And, you know, but let's come up with a plan. You physically need some medicine because you're not getting better on your own. And you can't make lifestyle changes unless you can cognitively realize why you're doing them and develop a plan to do it. And she was amazing. She gave me the lowest dose of antidepressant that I could take, that I was comfortable taking. She made a goal with me. 6 months, that's all I want you on this. In the meantime, you need to get help from a psychologist. So I saw a psychologist as well. And she did a lot of talk therapy with me. Really, that's mostly what we did. Some psychologists, you know, kind of poo-poo talk therapy now. They say it's not very therapeutic. In my case, it's really what I needed. I just needed to get it out. And she helped me. My husband stood in the kitchen and made me take that antidepressant. It's like, I love you. You need to swallow that pill. And after I did, I just made one change at a time. One thing. It was like one thing a day. One day I went out and I gardened. It's like, okay, I got that done today. One day I was like, I'm going to go to the Y. And I'm going to walk on that treadmill. And then I'm going to, next week, I'm going to try to eat a little bit less fat in my diet. It was just, it was one thing after another. And each goal that I reached made me confident to get to my next goal. And then my next goal. And before I knew it, like, my hair was growing back, I was gaining weight, I was smiling again, and I did. I think it took 9 months, but I was completely off my antidepressant, and that's awesome to me. It's awesome, and I want people to know, I do not mind talking about depression, because you can do something about it. It's hard, and you definitely can't do anything about it when they tell you to change everything.
Right.
You just got to do one thing at a time. That's all.
And I hope our mama bears heard, too, that don't discount therapy because the one therapist doesn't resonate or you don't get along with it or whatever. There is a process there to finding what works for you and what fits in it. It needs to be someone that you trust and that you innately vibe with their energy. All of that, the personalities. And you have to be very specific. If you're not comfortable with being on a high dose of medication, you need to find someone who will not force you to be on a high and are more interested in going about your way of healing or helping you get there, right? The way that's what I heard you saying was they worked with me to make me comfortable on my process of healing, which is why 9 months is not a long time. I mean, it sounds like it. 9 months is not a long time, but I think probably you were able to do that in 9 months because it sounds like you found someone who really worked well with you mm-hmm. and respected the way you wanted to kind of travel the road, and you did. And then it just, like, that's a blink of an eye, you know, especially for something you'd gone through so much, you know. I think the original way I met you maybe was that Zach was interviewing for nurse at camp, and you ended up being the nurse at camp. And I said to Zach, like, this woman has a tattoo of basically Mother Earth.
Naked Mother Earth.
I'm already obsessed with her. And he's like, you two would be a terrible combination because of our love of the human body and our fascination with it and our interest and our passion about exploring what that means and then expanding the knowledge to other people, right? So I knew that we had that in common. And then I found out your story. I don't remember how I knew your story, but I think I was telling Zach, like, gosh, I love her boys. They're so sweet. And he's like, they've been through the ringer already. And I could not believe that you were able to teach your boys compassion and all, when you were in survival mode. Like, survival mode to me seems so locked down. Like, how did you have the ability to both feed them and teach them to love other people and love Earth when that just happened, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question.
And that, I don't know how I taught them that. I was very militant when mm-hmm. I was in survivor mode. Like, today's Monday, we do this, and we do this, and then we come home, we go to bed, and we get up and do it the next mm-hmm. day. Maybe watching me is what has taught them that. I think my current husband has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. He has, we met shortly after Ryan died. We were friends first, and he came into the boy's life. I think Zane was like 18 months, mm-hmm. and Isaiah was about 3, and Zach, I think, was about 7.
Okay.
He has fostered that as well. Mm-hmm. He really has taught the boys a lot about growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a man who has a daughter, and that's all he has to worry about.
16.
At 15.
15, yeah.
He had a baby young, but that was his life. And then mm-hmm. here come me and my 3 boys and, like, everything we've been through. Yeah. And he embraced us.
Yeah.
And he raises my children lovingly, without question. It gives his whole paycheck to raising our family, you know, gives his time. And what person does that?
I know. I think about that all the time when I see John, because I'll see him at school events or just in the neighborhood. And I'm endlessly fascinated by both of you, I think, because I'm just like, what is he made of? Like, how do you do that? I mean, just incredible. Absolutely incredible. So I'm so glad that you two found each other and that you found love again. And talk to us about that process. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a great high note of, like, okay, well, you did suffer great tragedy and nothing will take that away. But then you found love again. That's amazing.
Yeah.
We met on Match.com.
Did you really? Yes. How did I not know that?
I was cruising through your profiles one day, and because I wanted to make friends. I didn't know how to really date, so I got an account. And I was reading this guy's profile, and there was a little sentence about, I don't really care if you just want to talk to me about your pet turtle. I'm here to listen to you and be your friend. And I was like, who put a pet turtle on their Match.com profile? And then I think he, like, liked me, so I liked him back or whatever. We winked at each other.
Yeah.
And even our first meeting was not glamorous. He showed up. I was at a coffee house, and I was in pajamas. Because, you know, I'm naturally sexy like that.
Which is why we're friends.
Yes. And he comes walking in, and I'm just like, dude is for real wearing a Mr. Rogers sweater. Like, what is up with this? He had just left, like, some work meeting, but we didn't really hit it off well. My best friend was in labor, so I'm, like, on my phone, like, excuse me.
Oh, my gosh.
My best friend's having a baby. I'll be back to you. We ended up getting our coffee to go, and we literally walked for, like, 2 hours and just talked.
Wow.
We became friends first. We were very much so friends first. We talked about music. We both had children from different mm-hmm. relationships, and we were both of the game where you don't get to meet my kids right away.
Yeah.
We have to make sure we are a thing mm-hmm. before our children are ever brought into mm-hmm. the picture. So then we started dating, and next thing you know, and he's, I think I love her. I'm like, oh shit, I think I love him. How's this happen? Like,
yeah.
I have two amazing men in my life, and they are completely opposite.
Interesting.
Every way. So
yeah, that was a fun little segue. Not even segue. That was just a fun little snippet of life. So we talked in the introduction about how you are just a truly gifted artist. I mean, there's just no other way of saying that. Was art always something you were good at? Was it always something you explored? And did it help you process the death of Ryan at all? Or were you just not interested in that at all when it happened?
To me, art is more than just my paintings. Mm-hmm. Art is everything. Art is dancing. Art is singing. Art is what you wear. Art is gardening. Art is cooking. So I've always been a very creative person. Mm-hmm. My mom really fostered that. My mom's an artist. She paints and she does calligraphy and has beautiful handwriting.
Oh,
she's
just cool. Calligraphy is back too.
Oh, it
I'm
is.
Hearing.
Is it
this.
Really?
Yes, that people are really bringing this art back.
Okay.
Penmanship is
very
it's
beautiful
awesome. Now.
Yeah.
So I learned my art from her, but I've always been a very creative person. I danced growing up. I painted. I did things like that. When Ryan died, at first I was like, no, I didn't use art at all. I it was not therapeutic to me. I just lived my life. And then I started thinking about it and I was like, well, wait, I did. I started knitting and I just picked it up. Like one day I picked up a set of needles and poof, I made a hat. And I was like, oh, I'm good at this. Okay. Mm-hmm. And knitting became, I think, my artistic therapy at the time because it's very methodical and you're counting and it's rhythmic and you keep your hands busy. And I would just sit on the couch and knit for hours. Mm-hmm. When life got stressful, I would just knit. I'd knit like a scarf.
That's amazing.
I would knit some baby pants. I would just knit. And I think it really, it did help me. Mm-hmm. It was very much so therapeutic and I got to create out of it.
Yeah.
Everything I created, I was like, oh, I'll just give it away. You have this. Mm-hmm. You have this. And so it did help. It really did. But it was a different kind of art at that time.
So you're also a great gardener. And I feel like you celebrate Mother Earth in two different ways. You realize the gift of this planet and you also recognize just her strength to nourish and to produce. How does this metaphor work for you?
I get to garden. I get to watch the earth produce and feed for my family and like see this amazing circle of life. But we females, we're part of that circle of life. Mm-hmm. We can create. And to me, I'm just, it blows my mind. I'm fascinated by what my body can do. Mm-hmm. It's the only chance I have to ever assist God, Mother Earth, whatever you believe in a miracle. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's very symbolic of Mother Earth. Like, we are part of that life cycle. We live, we die, we create, we reproduce. Mm-hmm. We make other human beings. Mm-hmm. And that's just amazing to me. Yeah. I love the fact that I'm a woman for that. That is my calling. Like,
One, I want to specify, even women who are not able to bear children, I think that because our genetics are so hardwired to be nurturers in a lot of ways, I see women who either are choosing not to have children, biological children, or not able to have biological children, nourish something equally intensely, right? So you also extend that to gardening. So I've seen women garden or like care for animals in just such a mother bear kind of way. So maybe talk about too how obviously you gave birth to three children and now you have this beautiful garden and give birth to like fruits and vegetables
and millions, she literally, like,
all the time.
She will, like, the happiest sight in the world is Dana Lindsay Dangler walking down the street with her three boys and bags of Swiss chard. Like, that is the best.
Or kale.
Or kale.
Yeah.
Very best.
Yeah. And actually, like, I am the grower. John's, like, the farmer. Like, he's the one that measures the pH of my soil.
Oh,
that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. You know, we both kind of study gardening together, and I've learned how to, like, interweave my crops and what I can grow, and I like to grow weird Like, I will grow a purple tomato because I can, and not necessarily even because I eat it all the time, but I just, oh, look, I grew that. Like,
yeah,
and that's incredible. Awesome. gardening to me is so therapeutic. You go out and it's literally dirt and it's gross and it's full of worms. And then you put mm-hmm. a little seed in and you watch it grow. Mm-hmm. And every year I go out and I start my garden from nothing. And every, like, I don't know, week, I would say, I would literally just go sit in the middle of my garden. Mm-hmm. Just sit there and be like, oh, look at that. Oh, look at the ladybugs, and there's a praying mantis, and oh, there's a bat. It's just amazing to sit out there and see this entire circle of life. Like, mm-hmm. yes, and I think you are right. I think a lot of us have that nurture instinct, mm-hmm. and we want to take care of stuff. And to me, gardening takes care of my family. Mm-hmm. And I'm, even though they don't always like the food I cook right. or eat, I still know that I'm doing something for them. And mm-hmm. I'm teaching them. I'm teaching them about the earth. You don't mm-hmm. get a lot of that education in school anymore. Yeah. I mean, we have lost touch with food and natural food and
yeah.
whole foods and just taking time to watch things grow and understanding where your food comes from.
Yeah.
So hopefully my children learn something from it.
Yeah.
They learn that you have to go weed a garden. Nobody likes to weed yeah. a garden. So it's really much so part of our life. We do it every year.
Yeah.
There's been years I'm like, I'm not having a garden this year. It's too much
right.
stress. Oh, every year I have a garden. Yeah. It's every year.
So we also mentioned in the introduction that you always do art for our water party. We are so thankful that you use your natural talent in the artistic capacity of painting Leslie and Clips to advance social issues such as our water party. The first year we asked you, we didn't even really know you at all, and you said yes with no hesitation. So can you tell us a little bit about why you said yes?
That's probably a twofold answer.
Okay.
Part of me is like, why wouldn't I say yes? Right. Like, to say no would... Jerk face, hello, like, I have time to paint a picture, and if painting a picture, which literally takes me maybe a couple hours, and it creates hundreds of dollars for something, mm-hmm. Why not? Why right. wouldn't you? I mean, that's just silly to me. I mean, to yeah. others, people are busy and they don't have time,
right.
and it's fine.
Right.
But it also, once a year, it reminds me to take, like, a step back in life, because I can't paint when I am stressing about life. I can't mm-hmm. paint when I'm anxious. I can't paint if I have a lot that I'm doing. I have to kind of have a clear mind to paint. And once a year, it reminds me to do that. Mm-hmm. It literally, it makes me put my world on hold, mm-hmm. go in and touch my creative side mm-hmm. and my artistic ability and create something that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think other people think they're beautiful because yeah, yeah. they buy them.
Yeah.
But,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, and I'm probably my harshest critic. You know, there's a couple years I'm like, oh, I didn't really like that painting. You know, I want to do a better one. So then that's when you get two. Because I'm like,
we always appreciate those years.
But it's a twofold. It's if I can do something that's takes literally no effort on my part mm-hmm. and make something better for somebody else, okay, I'll do that. And then also it reminds me that I need to take a break from life. And this is part of me. Mm-hmm. I can create this. I can do this.
Right.
So
and that is fantastic. And it's so cool that Isaiah, your son, has done paintings also for the water party and to be sold and raise money for clean water, which I think is such a testament to our kids watching us always and how, you know, we may think that our kids are sometimes put off by the way we act or the way, you know, but other times they're just like, yeah, I can do that too. And they follow that example and do really cool things. I have watched you as PTA president at our mm-hmm. children's school, and I know right now you are working on a fundraiser for really our Title I elementary school, which is no small feat. I mean, that is it has a host of its own challenges in fundraising mm-hmm. within our community. So what makes you, you know, take your kind of social consciousness and jump to action?
My inability to say no. No, you are right. We live in an area of town. There's slightly lower socioeconomic status. It's very urban. Mm-hmm. There is a big need at our school. There's a lot of children that need at our school. And I know that the state of our government and finances, our school can't provide mm-hmm. what the children need for extras, for things that are fun. Mm-hmm. School shouldn't be all business, I'm sorry. There should mm-hmm. be a little bit of joy in it. So if we can raise a little money for these kids and give them something, then we should be doing that. And it is hard. It's really hard. I'm sure you're finding out because, you know, you're PTA president.
Because I can't say no either.
But volunteering is dying. Mm-hmm. Like, people don't volunteer anymore. Everybody's too busy and everybody has something else they'd rather be doing. And why would I want to give my time? I mean, it's kind of a mindset for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I hope to change that because, right. you know, when I first became PTA president, I was like, ooh, that's the mom click. Mm-hmm. I'm not. I'm a young, tattooed, loudmouthed. Why would they want me? But mm-hmm. then I was like, no, I can do this too. And I think it would be beneficial for others in the community to be like, hey, she's not your average mom. Mm-hmm. And she's out there. Mm-hmm. She's PTA president. And she can do that. So I can too. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, I kind of hope that I can help make the kids smile occasionally mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and try to raise some money for the school that needs it and maybe set an example so that other people can do the same thing. Because I won't be there. It's my last year.
Right. I will hear from parents sometimes that when they're frustrated with their kids, like they don't do anything for their siblings or they don't do anything for us just without asking. And I'll often say, like, what do they see you doing for people that may not know that you're doing it for them? What are you showing? How are you showing them how to do that? How that works in real life? And when we asked you, what does it feel like to be you? You said, well, it's busy. And yet you carve out time intentionally to do things for other people. And so I hope our mama bears hear that. We are all busy. And there's a glorification of busy that I want to be very aware of just not doing. But the reality is that we are pulled in a number of different directions. But if you want your kids to think of other people, and if you want your kids to have some perspective about how good life is, how much harder life can be, then you need to be that example. And not to put pressure on yourself in a negative way. It can be as simple as if you see someone struggling to get the door open with 400 groceries, you open the door. It does not need to be serving as PTA president. Huh. But just the idea that no matter how busy you are, one, there's someone always busier. Mm-hmm. And two, if it is a priority to make your kids be able to step outside their own skin and see the person struggling on the street, then you kind of need to do that yourself, right? And so find something that you're passionate about and do that, whatever, however big or small that is.
So Dana, other than art, what do you do to indulge kind of your other self? We know that you are a great mother. What do you do to take care of the other, which is you?
Lately, I am fascinated and spend all my time in the gym. I discovered through my husband powerlifting. It actually started from my depression. Mm-hmm. I was like, my girlfriend Kim said, do you want to go to the gym one day? And I said, you know, I think I should. Mm-hmm. And it started literally with like a 5-pound little tricep like curl. Mm-hmm. And it was cute. It was very cute. It started with a 5-minute run / walk on a treadmill. And it turned into now I run half marathons and I compete for powerlifting. And I go to the gym 3 to 4 days a week. It's part of my life. And that's part of my other mm-hmm. self now because mm-hmm. I feel better. Actually, I hurt all the time, but I feel better because I'm making my body better and I want to be here for my kids and I want to be healthy and I want to extend my life as long as I can to the best that I can. So mm-hmm. that's huge now mm-hmm. for me. Really big.
So Dana, we love ending our conversations with a little segment we like to call the Obsess.
It's so hard to say.
I just want to see you do that again.
Leslie's doing jazz hands, Mama Bears. If you know Leslie, and even if you don't, they're actually quite amazing.
Very much.
So Dana, give us 3 things you're currently obsessing over.
All right. First one, like I said, powerlifting. Mm-hmm. Within the last week or two or so, I really developed this philosophy that I've heard a lot of people say, you can't out exercise a bad diet. Mm-hmm. So, and my diet's not, whew, it's bad.
Okay.
Not bad, bad, but bad. You know, I like things like alcohol and chips, potato chips and bacon. And those are like, whoo, I love them. So I decided to learn a little bit about macros, and I'm just beginning. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an obsession right now because it has to be.
Right.
Like, I went from eating kind of a paleo diet to not very many carbs at all to, whoo, I'm supposed to eat like 208 grams of carbs a day. And I'm like...
And what is this called? It's a
macro diet.
It's a way to break down, like, the nutrition that you need based on the activity level that you have.
Okay. And
you need a certain amount of fat, certain amount of protein, certain amount of carbohydrates. Good carbohydrates, not bad. Like, a bag of potato chips is not a really good carbohydrate for you to eat. And then you look at your caloric intake and you try to... adjust based on
your caloric
level.
Output.
Okay, yep. Gotcha.
So I'm very new to it. You can probably speak to it a little bit more than me, but it's hard. It is so hard. And every day I'm trying to track this in my little phone, and I'm like, I ain't got time for this. What did I eat? And, oh my God. So you almost have to be obsessed
initially
to actually do anything about it, to make any of the changes. Otherwise, it's slightly complicated. I really would love to have enough money to hire like a macro coach and be like, just tell me what to eat and I'll go buy it and I'll make it and it'll be fine.
Interesting. Okay.
So that's number one. Number two, I'm obsessed with Little League baseball. Baseball.
Whether you
all day, every day, 7 days a week. I love my little men. They three kids, five teams. I'm sure you, with all your children, have something similar. It's okay. There are rain out days.
Mm-hmm.
There are days that me and John just get to chill at the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard. We have to work together to make it work. Some days he's at a game. Some days I'm at a game. Somebody's always at a game.
Yeah.
My kids are hardly ever without somebody on their cheering squad out there.
Yeah.
So that's an obsession. I decided to try to do the undercut this winter.
It looks
the
so
side
good.
Shaved head. And I did. I loved it. But then I was like out running and I couldn't put my hair up and it made me so mad. I'm like, this is nope. I need my long hair back again. I need to be able to put it in a bun. I have to have my bun. So now I'm in the middle of the grow out process, and it's horrendous. The other night I had it like clipped up here and like clipped over here, and I'm sitting on the couch, you know, like just I don't care. John looks at me and oh, what's the matter, babe? He's like, that is the worst mullet I've ever seen.
Oh,
I'm like,
no.
Yes, but it's growing out. It'll be good in the end. So yeah, right now I have like a bushy little mullet on the right side.
It's fine.
So
it'll be okay. You can't really tell.
I often tell I'll stop at dinner and be like, you guys, this half of my head used to be shaved. Can we just take a moment and appreciate
how long it is now?
Yeah. Yeah. So
but it's like the second time I've been through a grow, like because I lost half my hair when I was depressed and I had huge bald chunks. So you'd think I would be really used to like this grow out process by now because I'm used to having short, sticky, bald. So, yes.
So, Dana, thank you so much. This couldn't have been an easy episode for you to talk about. And also really to just think about as we were gearing up to this, we did send you questions ahead of time to hopefully help you prepare a little bit. But so I just really appreciate you sharing your process with us and with the Mama Bears in hopes that, you know, for those of you going through something similar or something not real similar, but maybe on a smaller scale, like life can be really, really hard. And I think you've just offered some hope that not only can it be okay, but it can be great again. But you kind of got to walk through the crap, right?
You gotta walk through the mud.
Yeah, you
got to. Flowers.
Exactly. So I just appreciate so much you sharing your heart and just being really open to our Mama Bears. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Dana.
You're welcome.
Mama Bears, so many of you are going through the unimaginable today. Maybe it's not the loss of a significant other, but it might still be something that's making you question your foundation. So today we dare you to lean into the pain. What you resist persists, Mama Bears, and the old adage is true. In order to get over, you need to go through and not around. Find a friend, see a therapist, express your feelings through art. We encourage you to find something that can help you through this season. We dare you to make you a priority and do what Dana has done. Build a life that in the beginning you couldn't imagine, but one that will be full of love and joy.
So we would love for you to join the community. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Join the conversation. Respond to this episode. Let us know what you're thinking. Ask us questions. We're preparing for a Q&A episode, and we will answer just about anything. Right, Tessie?
Oh, yeah. We'll go there.
So send us an email at mamabeardares@gmail.com, message us on Facebook, however you'd like to reach out. We would love to know what you want us to tackle.
That's right. And as always, if you have a mama bear in your life who you think the world needs to hear about, then just email us or hit us up on social media. Mama bears, we appreciate so much you leaving a rating and review on iTunes. If you will do that now, right after you're done with this podcast, pull over. If you're in the car, pull over and just do that. That helps us so much reach more mama bears. And we really think the world needs to hear about women like Dana. So thank you so much for listening. We really, from the bottom of our hearts, appreciate it. Have a great week. We will see you on Wednesday for our Mama Bear Mini.
That's right. Thanks so much for listening. Go give somebody a hug.
Yes. This is really funny, and I've never admitted this before, but sometimes when I'm about to say your name, I'm always like,
"My name?"
Not that, but like, and I'm like, do I always say Leslie? I'm gonna find out on the podcast right now.
That's so,
you know,
funny.
So like, even with you, right before I say it, I'm like, Leslie. It's so intentional. So
that's really funny.
Yeah. Do you want to do the mama bear?
I feel like you should.
That's just gonna wind up.
I know. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm a little blah, 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 blah.
All right.